Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. We continue with our training camp series, and joining me today on the podcast is Fergus Connolly. Fergus has been on here before, and he's talked about his book, Game Changer, as well as his book, 59 Lessons, and always excited to have him on here. So, Fergus, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, sir.
Well, Fergus, we're going to focus today on some ideas that can help us right now prepare for the season. And, you know, we've seen this evolution really here, and especially as college football has changed this year to eliminate the two-a-day. But from this, you know, Junction Boys and Bear Bryant mentality where camp was about really grinding and proving out some kind of physical prowess to being sure that we're sharp, we're ready to play, we're focused on the health of our athletes, and that when we hit week one, these guys are ready to start their peak performance rather than trying to get them to recover at some point in camp because we've ground them down to the crown.
Well, then you need mentally tough men and physically tough men. And it's important, to be honest, it's important to develop that in young men today. And it's a great opportunity to do that. But it's how do we do it? And what are the tools that we use to do it? And we do that through the game. Play the game as physically tough as possible without, you know, putting somebody's health at risk. We can develop that toughness, and you can see that toughness. You know, with other groups outside of sport that, you know, that I work with, the definition of toughness and mental toughness is the ability to execute a task under extreme pressure. It's not, you know how long you can stay in the weight room, or how long you can push kids, or how many sessions you can do a day. It's can you focus on executing a task that is required of you under extreme pressure and distraction? So that's what we're focusing on. And then the other thing as well is that, you know, the way that practice and training have developed, the game is incredibly complex now. So we've got a lot of different attributes that we need to develop in our kids as they're coming through, their ability to execute their skill, you know, their scheme, recall, all of these things. And we need to do it in the most efficient way as possible so that we're not just exhausting kids and that we're not judging the quality or the effectiveness of the session by simply how much sweat that kids are producing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's easy to go out there and mistake activity for achievement, but we have to remember ultimately we are preparing for a test, which is, in this case, you know, if we're going through camp, it's week one, right? We need to get our players ready for week one. We want them to be optimal in their performance. And there was a section of your first book, Game Changer, and the chapter is Ready for Game Day. And you talk about three things there: readiness, preparedness, and potential. And I think it's worthwhile for us to cover those here in the podcast.
Yeah. So I think of readiness as like fitness. You know, we obviously have to get our players fit, and, you know, you develop that, you know, leading into the season. But the important thing to remember is that as the season starts, you want your players to be able to continue to get fit, to get fitter as the season goes on, to gradually get better at the game, to get, for their skill. You want everything to continue to improve. Now, that's not saying that you're going to go in undercooked or underprepared. It's not that. It's that you just don't want to peak for the first game and have guys so overtrained that they perform exceptionally well for the first few weeks and then fall off. And this is incredibly common. It's incredibly common where strength coaches, football coaches push their guys so hard. They hit week one, week two, they're playing well, and then suddenly form starts to drop and performances start to suffer. And you'll see it with teams who fall off badly in the last three or four games of the season, where guys have just been hanging on. They've had lots of injuries and niggles, and they're just falling off completely. You want to steadily rise right into game one, keep improving in game two, three, four, and keep improving in every single game. And what's happening is that, yes, physical fitness is improving, but also the brain speed is improving, the skill speed is improving, the scheme speed is improving, that everything is improving and becoming more efficient as the season goes on. And like I said, far too often you see teams who just limp in or peak for the first one or two games, and then when form's starting to fall off, people are starting, they're wondering what's happened. Well, you overcooked them, you overtrained them, and they just limped into the first start of the season.
And, that physical training part certainly is important. I remember, last week talking to Kurt Hester, and he says, if you don't have him physically prepared by now, you're kind of behind the eight ball. That's what the offseason is for. So hopefully coaches have trained those guys up and have confidence that those guys are, from a physical standpoint, ready to go. The next part of that is the preparedness. So really we get into the context of getting ready for game day, and we're talking about the technical and tactical elements that really comes down to, what the coaching staff is doing in their plan.
Yes, and also, if you play football properly, you're still developing fitness. It's not like players start to get unfit as the season goes on. So you've prepared the team, you've developed their fitness, they're coming in, they've got a level of preparedness, and now it's a case of trying to develop that readiness where on game day they're ready. They're ready to play on game day, and that's where teaching them the game, putting them in scenarios where they have to learn. And one of the biggest movements we've seen in football over the last few years is the realization that this is not PlayStation. I have to develop my players. I have to teach them scheme, but I have to also develop that instinct so that they can be prepared for the variations in the scenario that I put them into. And the only way to do that is to play football at a very high intensity or a very high quality in practice. That's the only way you can do it. You can do all the walkthroughs you want, but to install those memories, those patterns in players, their ability to react to these scenarios that come out at them in microseconds, that ability, you can only develop that by playing the game in practice at a very high quality or speed.
And that's something before we got going here you and I were talking about is, essentially drill design. And when you look at, why don't you just go out and play 11-on-11? Well, I mean, there's a lot of factors there, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of little things you need to work on, and you can't necessarily simulate all you need to within the setup of all 22 guys running around the field. So that's why we drill. We break it down into smaller pieces, and like you said, we go over those scenarios. We go over those situations. And, what I've found in going through any play when we install it and looking at every single position and all the things they have to face as far as a decision and the actions they need to take and the vision they have to have along the way, it really breaks down to probably 3 to 5 things that they're going to see again and again and again, regardless of maybe the different schemes being run against them. But those 3 to 5 things that each particular player is going to face. And really that's then what you create your drills around. It's not this, oh, I got this, drill book with thousands of drills and I could do all this stuff and keep it interesting. That is devoid of context. We have to provide the context for the game.
Exactly. I couldn't have said it better myself. Think of it along a continuum, I've written about where, there are different ways you can class drills, and we can all come up with different ways. But on one side, you've got a very structured drill where the player essentially, you could go over and take his brain out, leave it on the sideline, and just let him run the drill. In other words, he doesn't have to think. That's on one end. And then on the other end, you've got a completely chaotic drill where he has to be so alert and there's so many things, but there's no structure to it. what we're talking about is we're talking about finding that happy medium where he has to be very conscious, he has to be very aware, and you, to your point, you've created the environment where he is going to see one of those, you know, four or five scenarios that he's going to face in the game, and that's what you're trying to rep. That's what you're trying to prepare for him. But there has to be an element of chaos, and then the structure around that is the context that he's going to face in the game. And I often describe it as, if you think of wild horses in the field, you can't tell them exactly what to do. All you can do is just narrow in that field a little bit so that they're becoming aware of the environment, the context, the experience that they're going to face when the game comes around. So it's not, I hate saying that you should never use drills and that, you should only use games, you should only use, vice versa. It's not like that. It's about finding that balance between transitioning from very, very structured drills to open play and moving the dial as the season progresses or as the practice even progresses to create that experience for the player.
I think, that carries directly into when we do get into the season and we do have an opponent at the end of the week. And I think it becomes streamlined. So as I mentioned, maybe there's 3 to 5 different things that one particular player is going to see within this particular scheme. In that week, that's going to be narrowed down because the other team's not doing A to Z on the other side of the ball. They're doing a few things as well. And based on both that athlete who is going up against you as well as the particular schemes you run, that might be narrowed down and the focus of what you have to work that week for that particular scheme might be one or two things. So I think there becomes an efficiency when you approach it this way and how you carry, because how do you create the practice plan during the season? Do you just do everyday drills? I think that word gets thrown out there too much because I know coaches say, oh, we do everyday drills, and it comes across, I think, especially to maybe coaches at the younger levels, that we do these drills every day without variation. And again, it's back to, you could set the brain on the sideline. They're just going to go ahead and run mindlessly through drills. That's what we have to avoid because it doesn't prepare them for game day.
No, absolutely. And, you can do some of those. The only time I will do those kind of drills is actually in the warm-up. And I would use those drills actually as the warm-up because what you can do, and the only reason I would ever do them, is to be able to, from the trainer's perspective or the strength coach's perspective, keep an eye on how they move to see do they have stiffness, soreness, tightness. That's the only time. After that, you want to be as efficient as possible with your time because keep in mind, the less time that we train, the fresher the player is going to be at the end of the week. That's the first thing. And secondly, it's about the quality of the exposure. What's the most number of reps the player is going to get in a game? And in the game, he has to execute every rep as best as he can. So what we're trying to do in practice is replicate that, create every single rep that he executes in practice. He executes at maximum intensity, maximum quality, maximum psychological presence. He's there, he's seeing, he's perceiving. And when he has completed that rep successfully, that's like an ingrained memory in his mind so that when game day comes, he's recalling that. Because when you think of that singular moment in a game when a player decides to shift his weight from left to right or makes contact and makes a subconscious decision, that's being made on instinct. You're not thinking at that stage. And how do you develop that instinct? Well, you have to play at that intensity. And in practice, you narrow it down so that you're creating reps that ingrain that instinct or ingrain that pattern in the player's head. That's what we're trying to do.
From the amount of reps, game reps, especially when we're talking about football, I've had some coaches, a really good one, receiver coach of mine, he's coaching at the high school level now, named Jamie Fleming. But when he was with me at BW, he knew exactly the amount of reps that his guys could handle and be at peak performance in a game from his receiver position. And I mean, it's a position that requires a lot of running, especially the way we utilize them. And I mean, he would know. He'd be able to tell you, hey, he's getting 42 reps this game. This guy's going to get 13. If there's reps left over, it's going to go to this next guy here. And would actually have that approach in the game and not use up all those guys' reps early on because he wants them in the fourth quarter. And I think, you know, that's something we need to look at too as coaches and work into, you know, into our mindset, into our toolbox of how we play players. And, you know, it's obviously an advantage when you can get more guys ready to play. But I think, you know, we think that we can train them, and you'll be able to run all 70 plays that we have on offense this game. And it might not be that true for every athlete. That's something you have to gauge.
Absolutely. And it's a very important point. Remember that, you know, you're preparing to play at the weekend, so you've got all week to prepare the player to play those 40-odd reps, you know, if that's what the number is. And, you know, Cam Jossie and I, we've just finished this series of four manuals that we're bringing out this summer. But that was where we started, looking at the number of reps in a game and then how many are you going to do on each of the different days. And because on some days you want to develop the player's, you know, capacity to do a lot of reps. But on other days, you really want to focus on doing as few as they're going to do in the game day, but every single one of those must be at high quality. And I can't stress, like, I mean, it's like a golfer, or it's like a, you know, a marine sniper. You can go out and shoot all day, but the only ones that count are actually the quality ones. And in fact, it's not even just that. Bad reps count, and bad reps are making your players worse. You know, if the experiences and the reps that they're executing are very good, high quality reps at maximum intensity, that's what they're used to doing. And then on game day, when the pressure comes on, when they're struggling, that's what they're instinctively going to do. So it's not, you know, to your point, you only have to play the game once. You don't have to play it 3 days in a row. It's about the quality of the rep.
So that definitely brings up some questions here, Fergus. First of all, getting the quality of that rep, making sure that you set up your drill, you set up your individual periods or your group periods or your team periods to get that success. What have you found have been some keys to doing that the right way?
Well, so the first thing is to look at the amount of time that you want to practice for, not as much as you can do. And then starting, like you said, using, you know, the warm-up, actually using that as indie period, and developing using that time rather than just wasting 20, 25 minutes with, you know, nonsensical movements, using that with the coaches, the skills coaches, and going through that, and then increasing the complexity, going from very, very rudiment drills, what I call rudiment drills, where the players, like we said, don't have to think, introducing them to technical drills where they're using some skill, and then into tactical drills where there is, so a technical drill is essentially where they only have to execute one skill. Moving into a tactical drill now, we're increasing the complexity. So there's a scheme component and a decision-making component with more than one player, and then slowly moving into a tactical game scenario where you're starting to go 77 or whatever, right up. So the player is on a continuum where he sees the actual skill being incorporated now into a tactical, where there's a scheme element where he has to execute the skill and make a tactical decision at the same time, into small scrimmages or small practices. It has to be a continuum so the player can develop that and can understand and see its benefit, not just a whole collection of mindless drills that, you know, are just being done for everyday drills.
I know in the football world, we've moved to, you know, the up-tempo environment, and that exists in practice too. And we're going to, you know, essentially, you know, we don't need to condition because we're conditioning within the practice, and we're going to get a million reps in. And I guess in a lot of ways, people relying on the 10,000 hour theory, right? We got to get all these reps in for these guys. So I guess, you know, talk me through kind of where you stand on that and where, what's myth versus what's the reality?
So the 10,000 hour rule, you know, Malcolm Gladwell, I think, was probably the first to popularize it. But, you know, what everybody missed, and Erickson, the original researcher, actually had to write a book to correct it. And David Epstein's written about it since. The key point behind it was not the 10,000 hours, it was 10,000 hours of quality work. So some people who are more predisposed to, for example, playing football, need only 7,000. But it's the quality of the action. And that's the key thing. So that's the first point. You have to demonstrate quality. The second thing is, if you're going to go to no huddle, up tempo, or train fitness, first of all, make sure you're doing it right first, because otherwise you're just getting fit at doing something bad. So, you know, execute it properly first and then get better at executing that good quality skill or whatever it is. Don't just, you know, like you said at the very beginning, confuse, you know, activity for achievement. Anybody, you know, anybody can go out and run people into the ground. The other thing is, if you're really concerned about developing fitness, execute the skill or the drill, you know, the football component, and then in the middle of practice, put in work blocks where it's just a conditioning drill for 5 minutes. Then come back and execute the skill at good quality again. But don't confuse the two. You know, if you're really that concerned about it, and we used to do that before at some of the teams where in the middle we would have two conditioning blocks of 5 minutes and sometimes increase them to 7 minutes, where in the middle of practice, players would go and they would separate into different groups. One might be a speed group, another might be a conditioning group, another might be an agility group. And players would work on whatever element they needed to work on, whatever their limiting factor was for those 5 minutes at a pretty high intensity, and then go back into the drills that they had been doing before and now had to execute them again. But you didn't compromise the game. You didn't compromise the skill for the benefit of fitness. It's very, very important to understand that, you know, replicating plays or reps poorly is actually making the player worse, because you're ingraining bad habit and bad reps and bad instinct in the player.
I know a big part of that, especially the, you know, people call it deliberate practice, is having the right coaching cues. And I hear so many people, again, one of those things, somebody says it at a clinic and then it becomes ingrained in how we do it in our culture here. But the idea of, well, I just teach off of film. So I do believe you can still run a high tempo practice and get a lot of plays if you've installed a really good language. I think language is so important to coaching, that you have some cues that are meaningful and elicit change in those players when you say them. So, you know, your thoughts on, I only coach off of film.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think language is critical. I think you have to be very, very careful how you use it. I think you're trying to develop players who have very good game intelligence, and film is important, but being able to help develop the player's own ability to recognize what he has done well or what they're doing well or doing wrong, that's where you start to develop very intelligent players. And, you know, it's no secret that, you know, the best players the players with the best game intelligence generally have come from those coaches who use good cueing, good language, and good actual coaching, not simply just running drills and running reps. You know, and it's always interesting when you speak to players who can provide insight, you know, when they make it to the pro level, that the players who had very good coaches early on who taught them to critically analyze what they did and what their teammates were doing. Because that's what you're trying to develop. You're trying to develop that game intelligence, not just train, you know, train robots. You know, we're, you know, you, somebody said it once, I think you train animals, but you develop players. That's what we're trying to do. So it's having that communication. What did you think of that? How did you think that went? Did you see what you did there? Having those conversations are very important, because now the player's engaged. Now they're understanding. Now they're coming to you saying, yeah, yeah, coach, I know I got that wrong. I know what I did. Okay, brilliant. You've got that. You want to develop that so the players start to self-learn.
Definitely. And I think the key to how you phrase that is everything you said there. Those were questions that it's easy
exactly.
for us to tell them what they did right or wrong. We need to get them to have the feel for what was right or wrong. We need them, you know, at points, especially out on the field on game day, they've got to self-correct. And that's part of what we're training in practice as well.
Oh, absolutely. And the best teams and best players that actually do that themselves on the field. And, you know, so many coaches just say the first thing that comes into their head very often, when it would be wiser to just pause for a moment, see does the player recognize it, and then if they do, don't add to their stress. If you know that they've got it, leave them alone, or ask a deeper question saying, hey, okay, so that didn't work out. Why do you think that was? Or if they come to you and say, coach, no, don't say anything. I know I got it. Okay, but do you know why? And asking those questions. And it shows that this is a partnership as well, that we're all in this together. But it's about developing that, because you'll know it when the players come to you and say, coach, I think we should do this. Or coach, let me try this play. Now you know that you've got the players engaged, they're involved, they're committed. And they're starting to bring you feedback, perhaps something that you don't know or you can't see. That's when you know you've made it. This is not, it's not PlayStation. Just don't sit in the sideline and press buttons or shout things. This is it's a chaotic event and a relationship between you and your players where you want their feedback.
Fergus, I know you've seen this time and again, you know, working at the FBS level, working in the NFL, and we've talked about the player, we've talked about what we need to do with the player, but the coach as well, that we're talking again about readiness, preparedness, that applies to the coach as well. And I think too many times in this profession, you know, we're going to outwork that other guy. We're going to sleep in our office. That has a negative effect on our performance too.
Well, tell me about it. Yeah, no, absolutely. I think one of the challenges we have in society today is the idea that to do something better, we have to do more. And I think it's about finding that balance between really looking at the quality of what we do and doing, you know, as little as is necessary to get the best effect. And, you know, it takes time, but I was speaking recently at a conference. I was explaining, you know, but what I see is three different types of coaching groups. The first group is the group that just have a system and copycat drills, and they're at the base level. They really run discipline very hard, and it's all about sweat and hard work. And that's fine. They might turn a team around. They might have a little bit of success initially, but that's a team that will fade off, you know, halfway through the season. Players will get tired and burned out. But, you know, we're all working hard. The second tier have a very, very good system. They've got a very good structure. Yes, they're disciplined. They work very hard. But they only have one system or two systems or one or two options. It's really about drill. It's about repetition. It's about rote learning. There's no effort to really develop themselves or the game intelligence. And, you know, they pride themselves on how hard they work, you know, how hard they can work their coaches. And it's just all about the goal. But the really top tier, your Belichicks, your Sabins, the coaches like that, they evolve and develop and are creative. You cannot evolve, you cannot be creative if you have your foot on the gas all of the time, because you're not aware and you're not trying to learn. You're not evolving. You're not recognizing your weaknesses. You're not open. And you have to ask yourself, am I at the bottom, the middle of it, or do I want to be a top tier coach? And that's about pausing, being confident in what you're doing, and being confident to know that the creativity, the freshness, the awareness that I'm going to need to be a truly great coach, I need to balance I need to have a work-life balance, and I need to balance how much time I spend. And you know, that work-life balance is also about, you know, bringing in new ideas. You just don't sit. It's not that you go and, you know, sit on the beach all the day, you know, for half the day. It's about bringing in new ideas, and but being confident to know that looking at new things, listening to new ideas, that that's actually helping you. It's not making you worse.
Well, speaking of new ideas, you are coming out with a series here for football coaches that's going to be ready here soon, and we'll tweet it out once you have it up and ready to go. But can you give our listeners a preview of what you've put together?
Yeah, so when I wrote Game Changer, you know, the focus of Game Changer was to try and help coaches recognize that, you know, they're to look at everything around the player, you know, the psychological component, you know, how do we speak to players? How do we assess them, profile them? But what I wanted to do was to give to take Game Changer and write an applied version. To write Game Changer again would be a huge book. So I rewrote this with Cam Joss, and we created four small manuals, and the manuals are the application. So taking some of the football specific stuff and explaining how, you know, we would look at a week, how we would break it up, how you train and emphasize strength on one day on the field and in the weight room. Some of the other things we looked at were recruiting. So giving templates to coaches for how to profile players very, very simply, you know, so when a player perhaps struggles or fails, a very quick checklist, you know, is it that he's just not concentrating? Is it that he's not fast enough? You know, how do we, and then identifying how we fix those. And then some examples of practice plans, how, you know, we can just make sure that, you know, on certain days that we, all of the coaches have the same theme so that we're emphasizing the right things at the right day. So if, you know, just like Game Changer, if the only thing it does is make coaches think a little bit differently and they get one or two ideas, then it'll be a success.
Well, Fergus, as always, I appreciate you joining us here on the podcast, and certainly we'll look to have you back here again. We will tweet out the links to those things once you have them up. Follow Fergus on Twitter. It's at Fergus_Connolly, and that's FERGUS_CONNOLLY. Fergus, thank you again for your time, and as always, it's great talking coaching and football here with you.
Keith, thank you very much, sir. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Please check out all we're doing on Twitter at our Twitter handle for coaches at FBDEVCoach. Check out our systems for blocking, defeating blocks, and tackling at footballdevelopment.com. If you register there with your email address, you can get access to our shoulder tackle system, the entire system, as well as three free videos of your choice, either from advanced tackling or from our contact system, which is blocking and defeating blocks. This is some of the best stuff, some cutting edge stuff, I think, that you're going to find is very efficient and effective in the way you teach your players. And there's a lot of drills here that help you improve that skill year round. Check it out at footballdevelopment.com. Check out our coaches' notes on usafootball.com. Go to the resources tab for development and training. Our coaches' notes are given to us by coaches around the country, state champs, some of the NCAA leaders. Those guys have been doing a great job in putting that together in our tips format, which is teach, install, and problem solve. And in there, we also have further review, which we allow our clips to be downloadable, and you can download those and put them into your Huddle. No need for an extra subscription to a Huddle page. So check those out. And as always, go to blogs.usafootball.com for our show notes, our analysis articles, and coaching. Finally, if you're enjoying the podcast, head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rate. If you have a minute, write a review. It really helps out the podcast.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.